I find myself in an interesting place. Again, I'm Joseph. This is Input English. I have driven down to the University of California, Santa Cruz campus. This is their botanical garden and arboretum. An arboretum is a place to look at trees, to study trees and observe trees, a collection of trees. And a botanical garden is a collection of plants other than trees. Actually, those two terms are not really mutually exclusive. For my money, they could have called this an arboretum and I would have been satisfied. Or they could have called it a botanical garden and again, I would have been satisfied. I don't make a big distinction between trees and shrubs and plants. There are differences, but in the context of a place to come visit, enjoy, and observe plants and trees, either term would be fine with me. But they chose to call it the Arboretum and Botanical Garden. Perhaps with my visit here, I'll figure out why they made that combined name. It's a bit of a surprise. As I got here, I didn't know what to expect, and I didn't do a lot of online research before I got here. I figured I would just come and see what they had to offer. Places like this usually have a brochure or a map, and they frequently have people who are willing to fill in some details and give some information. When I arrived here, the gift shop was closed, and this would be a logical place to find someone knowledgeable about this botanical garden. But the gift shop is closed. It will open shortly. Right here, this is a cactus garden. The plants around here are cacti and succulents. These are plants typically growing in arid conditions. This portion of the botanical garden is devoted to plants from Africa. Now, this surprised me a bit. I didn't expect them to import lots of plants and trees from other continents, but they did just that. They have a section devoted to Africa, and they have another section devoted to New Zealand. One of the comforting features of this facility is that it is run by the University of California. To me, what that means is that this was put together in a very thoughtful, learned way, not a haphazard, chaotic way. In the context of bringing plants from overseas and planting them here in California, that assurance of responsibility and learnedness is important because bringing plants and animals from overseas to a new location can create invasive species. I'll give you an example. Years ago, people released Burmese pythons in South Florida. A python is a snake that constricts its prey and then swallows it whole. And at some point in time, Burmese pythons were imported into the United States as pets. They were kept in the house for the amusement of the owners. Eventually, the owners grew weary of having a snake in the house, and so their solution was to release it into the wild. So now, in 2025, South Florida and the Everglades have a big problem with an invasive species because these Burmese pythons have almost no natural predators. They're not from that ecosystem. They're not from that region. And so their traditional predators from their natural habitat are not present. The only predators that have been identified for Burmese pythons in the Everglades are alligators and humans. The state of Florida tried to grapple with this problem, and they've tried a number of things. They had a bounty so that people could go out and kill these snakes and then prove that they had done so and thus receive a reward, a bounty. The trouble with a bounty is, although it eliminates a few individuals from this population invading this new ecosystem, it doesn't get to the heart of the problem, which is reproduction. These Burmese pythons are breeding, and their population is getting bigger. Recently, I saw a news feature. Someone had created a robotic rabbit with the idea of attracting Burmese pythons so that they could be dispatched. The feature explained that the robotic rabbits attracted a lot more than pythons. Recent efforts have been directed toward finding the nests of these pythons and eliminating the nests. I'm not certain that we're going to see any success long-term dealing with this invasive species. So as I described that, you can see that we should be a little concerned about introducing species into California that could become invasive. Again, I trust the University of California. I expect that they have done due diligence and have safeguards in place that they will not create an ecological disaster for California. In Northern California, we have two invasive species of plants that create a lot of problems. One is called star thistle. That was brought to North America by early settlers from Europe. It probably came included in fodder for animals. The seeds got into the environment and the plants reproduced. Now one sees a lot of star thistle in Northern California, and it's not pleasant to deal with. Another woody shrub that we see in Northern California that is clearly an invasive species, we call Scotch broom. It reproduces wildly and will choke off an area with vegetation. In our area, the only way we have seen control of those two invasive species is to cut them out and remove them from the local environment. In the case of Scotch broom and star thistle, it's way too late to eliminate them from California. That appears to be an impossibility. Here we have an example labeled finger aloe. These are succulents. They're not cacti, but they frequently grow in the same location as cacti. Here is a cactus. To the right, we have another succulent. This one is not labeled. Another African species of cactus. It is a pleasant place to visit. They have walkways and paths. They put up rope like here so that people can tell where it is not appropriate to walk. They don't want us trampling all the vegetation. From time to time, one comes upon a bench so one can just sit and enjoy the surroundings. I suppose we should recognize that although they brought a bunch of plants from Africa and planted them here in Northern California, they did not really recreate the African ecosystem. The grass and weeds around here are all native plants. What they have done is planted a few non-native plants here and then watched them grow. We're coming up on a gate, an opening in the fence, and walking through this, I think we are now in New Zealand. Not literally, just metaphorically. Here's the sign that welcomes us to New Zealand. Some of this display is not so clear when one looks at it. This, for instance, this post behind me, this pole, as we look at that pole, at the top, there is a big piece of glass embedded in the top of the pole. That is not labeled, so I can't tell why that is there. I guess I should classify that as a sculpture. I'm now in the midst of some wooden sculptures. Three of them. They all look very similar. Three of these are virtually identical. I didn't see a sign that explained the significance of those human figures carved out of wood. Here we have evidence that someone has been working here. Over here, you can see where some of the weeds have been trimmed and dead vegetation has been removed. This is notable because much of this garden attributed to New Zealand is fairly unkempt. Unkempt is a wonderful word that means not well cared for, not well maintained. If a person's shirt is half out of the pants, if they're unshaven, if they appear to be dirty, if their clothing is all disheveled, you could say they are unkempt. This garden is unkempt. It is overgrown. There is a bunch of dead vegetation. It looks very shaggy with weeds. Now, these are not complaints. These are descriptions. Don't misunderstand that I am complaining. It's just what I see. I come here as an observer, not a critic. Even though this garden is unkempt, it is a very pleasant place to visit. One of my observations is that I see no other people here. I have it to myself. That's an expression that you'll hear commonly. If you go to a place that is uncrowded and you don't have to deal with the behavior of other people, you can say you had it to yourself. It doesn't mean that there are absolutely no other people. It just means that there are at least very few people with whom you have to deal. Here we have a paved sidewalk, and then this is an unpaved footpath. This is where people have walked, and the grass has been beaten down. I'm now on a footpath. Now, this is not a sidewalk, and this is not a footpath. You can see the two ruts. And you know, just from looking at this, that these ruts were made by the tires of vehicles. Wagons, carts, trucks, automobiles. These are tire ruts. Usually, if we talk about a tire track, we're talking about a very superficial imprint of the tire tread on the soil. However, if you talk about a tire rut, you're talking about a deeper impression that was created by vehicles crossing through that area over a long period of time. That's what's going on here. If you look down the road, you can see that these ruts are hollowed out in a curved shape, suggesting that trucks or cars have gone through here over a period of decades. So what do you call this? If it's not a sidewalk and it's not a footpath, this is just a dirt road. If you saw evidence that people had spread gravel, that is finely ground or finely shaped stone, you could call it a gravel road. But since we see very little gravel, mostly we see dirt, it would be best to call this a dirt road. Here we have sidewalk that simply ends, but then people have used that path beyond the end of the sidewalk. Looking at this, one sees a lot of cracks and broken sections. I would conclude that this is a very old sidewalk. They probably had this part of the garden configured differently in the past, and this was used as a sidewalk. now that the garden has changed, this is what's left. This little wooded area is full of non-native plants brought here from New Zealand. Many of these plants are labeled with a small sign to explain their species and their common name. As I stand here, I can hear hummingbirds in the branches of these trees. There is no evidence that they brought hummingbirds here from New Zealand. No, these are native California hummingbirds. This is a small building sitting isolated out here in the botanical garden, and above, mounted on the roof, is a box, and you can see to the right side, someone has drawn a sketch of an owl. So I would infer that this box is designed for owls to use for nesting. Below the hole, below the entrance, there are three channels cut in the wood. It appears those are to help the owl get a grip as they land at that opening so that they can safely arrive at this nest box and then enter through that small opening. This is an owl box, a nesting box for owls. Nesting boxes for owls are not unusual. I have actually thought about putting some up in our yard. We have some trees in a fairly densely wooded area, and I have thought about mounting one or more boxes like that in our yard. Why not support the owl population? After all, owls help to control rodents. They're part of the ecosystem and they're part of the balance. So giving a small advantage to some owls makes sense to me. I would rather have owls than rats. In reality, both owls and rats are important to the ecosystem. Here we have come upon a fire hydrant. This is a device that's hooked into a water supply. There is pressurized water. This device is clever. It has a five-sided wrench attachment here, and that is the valve. There's another one here and here. So you could infer that this hydrant has three separate valves to control water out of the three separate outlets. Here we see the three separate outlets. Here, the valves are probably here above ground. They're probably not deep. In northern locations, the problem with having the valve up above ground is that the water could freeze if there's a hard freeze, and then the device could rupture. Because of this, it is common in cities in the northern part of the U.S. to have fire hydrants where the valve is deep underground. Thus, they can close the valve down at a level below the soil so that it wouldn't freeze. And then the upper parts of this pipe could be left empty. Fire hydrants, for instance, in Philadelphia or New York would be of that design. Surrounding the fire hydrants, you see these posts, and they're simply to prevent people from driving a vehicle into the fire hydrant. If you shear this fire hydrant off by hitting it with a car, you're going to create a big mess and a big expense. Earlier, I talked about a dirt road, and I mentioned a gravel road as an alternative, and this is an example of a gravel road. According to the signs, we are now in Australia. Again, not literally. Figuratively, we are in Australia because they have chosen to bring a lot of trees and plants here from Australia and plant them. This is described as one of the largest collections of Australian plant species in the world outside of Australia. As I look at these plants, I can't really tell that we have changed locations significantly compared to other places in the park. However, there are small signs that describe the species of the plant being displayed and its common name. Some of these plants have traditional medicinal uses, and some of the signs describe what that medicinal use was. Here we have a very large eucalyptus tree. And as I recall, eucalyptus trees are from Australia originally. Eucalyptus trees are very common in California. I have spoken about eucalyptus trees in other videos. This is a variety of eucalyptus tree which is not common in California. It is labeled Darling Range Ghost Gum, but the genus is eucalyptus. It looks similar to, but distinctly different from, other eucalyptus trees. I came upon a bit of a surprise here. This shrub behind me is labeled a hill banksia. I'm quite unfamiliar with that name, but that's what is printed on the small sign. The reason I'm fixated on that plant is that I have one of these in our front yard. To my eye, the blossoms look a bit like ears of corn sticking straight up. And in our yard, we indeed have one of these shrubs growing. I do know that the previous owner of our house worked in a garden center. The wife worked in a garden center, and she would bring home plants from the garden center and plant them in the yard. It appears that she bought one of these hill banksia plants at the garden center, brought it home, and planted it in her yard. Now, since we have bought the house, we are the proud owners of one of these non-native plants. I'm now in the South African region of this botanical garden. These plants have been brought here from South Africa. Specifically, most of them have been brought from the very south of South Africa, right from the Cape area, which is noted for its tremendous biodiversity. The label of this plant is Bird of Paradise. We're in the South African section of the botanical garden. This was brought here representing plants from the very south of South Africa. The blossoms have all withered. All the blossoms are spent, and now they're dry and dead. When the blossoms are fresh and new, they're quite beautiful. The reason I showcase this plant is it is another example of a non-native plant in our front yard. Next to the house, we have a bird of paradise, and every year it produces a bunch of beautiful blossoms. As of today, the blossoms on our bird of paradise look just like these. They're spent. They're dried out. They're beyond their prime. And I think a good gardener, were I a good gardener, would remove those old dead blossoms to neaten up the appearance of that plant. I have to admit that my bird of paradise looks very much like the one right here, with a bunch of spent blossoms, all dried out and not looking very good. This small section of the botanical garden is dedicated to native California plants. Compared to the size of the plots attributed to Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa, this place is super small. Again, that's not a complaint. It's an observation. It's what I see. They have a lot of small signs. The signs explain the genus and species of each plant, as well as its common name. Some of the signs tell where the plant came from in California, and some of the signs stipulate who donated the plant to the Arboretum. There are opportunities for people, for citizens, to become involved in this effort by providing resources so that the Arboretum can expand its collection. This sign showcases the fact that this specimen is an island barberry, typical of the Channel Islands, and these are described as endangered or threatened species. This section of the botanical garden is dedicated to bees. Now, when one says bees, you could be talking about honeybees, but there are also other types of bees. For instance, bumblebees. In common everyday speech, a lot of people classify some wasps along with the bees, for instance, yellow jackets. Bees are important pollinators to maintain diverse plant life, and that is talked about here in this display. This is a bee hotel. The idea is to promote propagation of bees by providing places for them to reproduce. It looks like most of these holes are open, although this one may have a remnant of bee reproduction. I have seen companies that produce bee hotels that one can put up in the yard to promote wild bees. Now, these bee hotels are not used by honeybees. Honeybees use hives, either natural hives, for instance, in a tree. Sometimes honeybee hives can be found in abandoned buildings. When we lived about 30 miles from here, we had a natural honeybee hive in a hollow portion of an old oak tree right above the house. When we were living in Central California in the Sacramento area, we had beehives, which we kept in boxes. The boxes were purpose-built to house beehives. And in fact, people simply refer to those boxes as beehives. As a former beekeeper, I think of the hive as the biological part provided by the bees. That is, the bees, the eggs, the larvae, the pupae, the honey, and the honeycomb. I consider those all parts of the beehive, and the box is a bee box. But the standard way of talking about beehives, people call that box a beehive. As I've been here this morning making this video and exploring, the one thing I haven't seen is many bees. I've seen more hummingbirds than bees. The lack of bees nearby does not really upset me because I have to remember that this is late in the fall. It's almost winter here, and the bees are not going to be very active. There are very few blossoms available for foraging, so the apparent lack of bees is probably mostly a function of the time of year. I've chosen to come here in mid-December. This small area in the botanical garden is labeled the butterfly garden. As I look around, I see no blossoms and no butterflies. Again, I think that is a function of the time of year, and I'm not critical that they've labeled this the butterfly garden with obvious absence of butterflies. It's the time of year. I think in the spring, this little garden would be lovely and probably full of butterflies. Here's a sign that talks about the native butterflies that one can expect to find in the Monterey Bay area. I have seen many of these butterflies in our yard. We certainly have seen swallowtails. I've seen hair streaks. Red emeralds are very common. And the California tortoiseshell is fairly common. Oops, I almost forgot the painted lady. Very common. I am fascinated by the butterflies called hair streaks, like this one and this one. They have very small structures on their rear wings that look sort of like antennae. These have been interpreted as decoy antennae with the idea that a would-be predator might bite in the region here of these antennae and spare the butterfly's head and thorax. This may be a survival strategy for these butterflies to survive predator attacks. That's what I was taught at university, and until I see evidence to the contrary, I believe that these are decoy antennae as a survival strategy. For me, this has been a very pleasant visit to a place I had never visited before. It's one of the great byproducts of creating the Input English channel is the need to make interesting videos sends me to interesting places so that I can share them with you. I hope you enjoyed this video. Of course, it was created for comprehensible input, and thinking back on what we talked about today, this video will be full of lots of interesting, fun, new terms. I invite comments below, and if you like videos like this, be sure to click on this one next. See you soon.